Bore da pawb, a croeso i'r digoeddiad heddiw. Good morning and welcome everyone to the launch of our latest report on the role of trade unions in producing a fair economy for Wales. This report is produced as part of the IWA's focus on a successful green and fair economy. And the report is produced with kind support from the Friends Provident Charitable Foundation. So we're thankful to them. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Joe Ross, and I'm the IWA's Policy and External Affairs Manager. And for those of you who don't yet know us, the IWA is Wales's leading independent think tank. And we have a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy, research and advocacy, our online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda setting events, such as this one. Most importantly, we're a member organisation. We've got nearly 1,000 members across the country, as well as far further afield. And the way that we're funded is through our members, the events we run ourselves, and the independent trusts and foundations who come on board for specific streams of our work. We are politically independent and we don't represent a specific sector, trade or interest group. Instead, we seek to bridge policy and institutional divides and show what might be possible when we work together differently, seeking consensus where possible and robustly challenging the status quo when we need to. We're especially interested in identifying and facilitating long-term change on issues that will make a difference to Wales's economy and democracy. We're currently running projects on creating a successful green and fair economy for Wales, of which this report is a part. And the other part of our policy work is on media and democracy. This project published its first papers at the end of last year, with more coming imminently. So keep your eyes peeled on our channels for updates on those. We also run highly regarded training sessions on the nitty-gritty of how devolution works in practice. These attempt to support people from across Wales to get their heads around how to help shape effective policymaking using their own experiences and expertise. If you'd like to know more about what we do and support us, then please do join us as a member and help shape Wales's future with us. One of my colleagues will put in information in the chat, which will help you become a member if you would like to. Now, this new piece of work called Beyond Social Partnership, Devolved Levers to Support Trade Unions, comes from our economy portfolio, looking to make Wales's economy stronger, greener and fairer. Over recent months, we've been undertaking our own desk-based research into the best models of trade union relations and the impact of trade unions on the economy. We've spoken to experts in the field and young and precarious workers in Wales, looking at how we can use the levers available to the Welsh Government to support best practice industrial relations, empowering trade unions, and ultimately making a fairer economy for all in Wales. Before we get started, and I bring in our economic policy lead, Harry Thompson, who you can see on the screen, a bit of housekeeping. We always encourage you to introduce yourselves and engage with each other in the chat. So please do say hello. We've got a really interesting group of attendees today joining us from organisations like the Welsh Government, the Senedd, lots of trade unions, Yes Cymru, Cardiff Council, Museums Wales, House of Lords, lots of interested parties who are worth having a conversation with. So please do share your email if you're willing to be contacted by other attendees. And yes, we would steer you towards the chat part of the function today in order to have those conversations. This is all part of kind of the IWA having a role of facilitating conversations around Wales's future, and in this specific instance, Wales's economic future. So please do have those conversations in the chat. As this is a webinar on Zoom, participants, you're muted by the host, and we're going to use the Q&A function for questions rather than the chat function. So those two are kind of distinct. So have a look at the bottom of your screen and get thinking about your questions now. We may, if you pose your questions in the Q&A, we may bring you in if the tech will allow us to bring you in to just speak your question. But please do write them down first so we can kind of identify which ones we want to go with. And also upvote other questions if you think you'd like to hear an answer to it, or you think that's a good question and I want to find out more. One other thing to note is that all chat and questions are recorded, so just be mindful of that. We'll be keeping the event to strictly an hour, so you can all You know, go and have your lunch afterwards, straight into your lunch break. I don't want to keep you too long. And if you feel inspired to tweet, you can at us on our Twitter handle of at IWA underscore Wales. And we would encourage you to use the hashtag IWA social partnership so that we can keep a track of the conversation and see what you think of the event and the report as well. Video and audio of today's event will also be made available on our YouTube and our podcast channel. So please do flag those to any colleagues who are unable to make it. And talking of podcasts, please do look out for the forthcoming podcast episode we have, where Harry discusses all things trade unions and social partnerships with Hannah Blythin, Deputy Minister for Social Partnership with Welsh Government, and Nisri Mansour, Policy Officer at Wales TUC. Now then, I'm going to ask Harry Thompson, our economic policy lead, to talk us through the findings of the paper before we open out to a Q&A from the audience. At its heart, our new paper aims to contribute towards a discussion about what the role of the state is in Wales, and we welcome your thoughts. So please do get thinking of your questions and remember to upvote those that you think are interesting ones to answer. And without further ado, I will pass on to you, Harry, to talk through the report.
Thanks very much, Joe. So hello everyone, and thanks very much for attending the launch day of our new paper, Devolved Levers to Support Trade Unions. I think the first question really is, why is the IWA researching this topic? Well, clearly this is a topical issue. We're launching this in Heart Unions Week, and during a time when we've seen the biggest wave of industrial action across the UK for a long time. This is predominantly in the public sector, particularly in Wales. But we have seen walkouts even in places like Amazon warehouses in the wider UK. We've also just yesterday seen teachers and ambulance workers reject a new Welsh Government pay offer. So it looks like trade unions and industrial action are going to be in the news for a while. But this isn't just a topical issue. There have been problems brewing for a long time. As we'll go into in a bit more detail in a moment, living standards have been declining in the UK relative to other countries for a long time. And whilst devolution has provided a bit of a buffer to that in Wales, it hasn't been able to do it completely. Low and middle income earners have been hit particularly badly. And we've seen a lot of new negative developments for low earners too, with casualisation of working practices. We heard some pretty negative stories in our research about the way the flexible labour markets we have in the UK, which have even been boasted about by some past UK governments, have impacted people's lives. And I think fundamentally at the IWA, we like to identify an issue, articulate why it matters, and start a conversation about solutions. So that said, what is the issue here? Well, at its heart, it's that the UK economy is delivering less and less for working people than comparable countries, and Wales remains one of the poorest parts of the UK. This is obviously something that's being felt as something of an event at the moment. We've all heard about the cost of living crisis that's being caused by inflation. However, this isn't just a temporary event caused by external factors such as the war in Ukraine. Living standards in the UK have been suffering for a long time. The Resolution Foundation does some really interesting work on this, and we've taken a look at their work and that of some of the, that of some other organisations to demonstrate the problem. So in the 15 years between 2005 and 2020, UK incomes grew by about 12%. And the previous average for every 15 years we've seen since the 1960s is 40%. So we can see that living standards have really started to stagnate in the UK in a way that they haven't before. Now, there's something of perception in the UK that whilst this isn't great, it's something that a lot of other countries that look like the UK are dealing with too, that there's a general decline in the US and the European Union. But this isn't strictly true. The same piece of research found that across Europe, only Greece and Cyprus saw less spending power growth than the UK from 2007 to 2018. Typical incomes during that period actually fell by 2%, but they rose by 27% in Germany and 34% in France, which is a pretty stark statistic. So over the last decade and a half, you've really seen that living standards in the UK, relative to those in countries we would traditionally see as our peers, have pretty much collapsed. We're now in a situation where typical incomes in the UK are 6% lower than in Ireland, 10% lower than in France, and 19% lower than in Germany. So something is going really wrong here. Now, remember I said that the research in this area that incomes in the UK are actually 10% lower now than in France. But actually, the UK's high inequality makes this even worse for some people. Incomes at the very top in the UK are actually 17% higher than in France. But incomes at the bottom in the UK are actually 20% lower than in France. So if you're at the bottom of the income distribution in the UK, you are far, far poorer than in most other European nations. We like to view the UK as a wealthy country, but for a huge amount of people, that simply isn't true. It's not just the Resolution Foundation either. Lots of think tanks are starting to sound the alarm about this. The IPPR Commission on Economic Justice found that between 1979 and 2012, just 10% of income growth went to the bottom 50% of income distribution, and the bottom third gained almost nothing. Meanwhile, the richest 10% took 40% of all total income growth. And why is this happening? Well, there are a lot of reasons that we'll go into a bit more, but one useful measure is to split the economy between labour share of national income and capital share of national income. So what does that mean in simple English? Well, national income is just all the money earned in an economy. The labour share of that is simply the amount that goes to compensating labour, so wages, salaries, anybody who works for a living. The capital share of income is earned by owning capital, so share dividends, rents, profits, etc. The labour share used to be about 70% in the UK in the 1970s, so 70% of all income went to paying people's wages and salaries. It is now about 60%, so the proportion of national income going to wages and salaries has dropped. And as we've seen, these wages and salaries are increasingly unevenly distributed themselves, because that still includes things like CEO pay. So for a lot of people at the bottom, you're getting a smaller slice of a smaller pie. Wages and salaries make up a smaller proportion of the national income than they used to in the 1970s. And these wages are increasingly unequal, with top earners taking more and more of them. And that's how you end up with people at the bottom in the UK having far lower living standards than in other European countries. Now, what does that look like in Wales? Well, if the UK is a poor society with some very rich people, as it's been described by the Financial Times, Wales is even poorer still. Resolution Foundation research found that the household incomes gap between Wales and the UK had fallen, but it had fallen from about 10% in the mid-1990s to 7% in 2019. Wales's incomes are the second worst of any UK nation or any region of England. It is one of the poorest areas of Western Europe, and its incomes are comparable to those in the south of Italy. The Bevan Foundation's snapshot of poverty in winter 2022 demonstrates this. It found that nearly half of all households in Wales struggle to afford anything beyond day-to-day items. Now, one explanation for this is that Wales has some of the lowest output per head in the UK. Some research has shown that Wales has fewer people employed in the highest paying and most productive sectors, such as ICT, finance and property. In line with this, only about 0.6% of taxpayers are estimated to pay the additional rate of tax levied on earnings over 150k a year. So the English total is over twice as high at 2% compared to that 0.6% in Wales. Now, there's a temptation to look at this situation and say, great, it's clear what the problem is here. Wales has a missing top of the most productive, highly paid employees in areas such as ICT, finance and property. We just need to create this new band of high earners in Wales and we'll have reached average UK productivity levels. And that's what we're quite worried about, because if you do that, you just create a new mini UK within Wales. As we've seen, the UK is predefined by harsh inequality, with the economy working really, really well for some people and working pretty disastrously badly for others. If we're looking to build Wales's economy up, we've got to not repeat the mistakes that have been made in the UK economy. There's been a problem in the UK of average income growth, masking flatlining or declining incomes amongst low and middle income earners due to really high growth amongst higher earners. So in Wales, we've got to learn from these mistakes and build economic justice into the structures of the economy so that everyone benefits from increased prosperity. So what can unions do? Well, we've identified the issue. The UK is an extremely unequal economy, comparable living standards are falling, and Wales is one of the poorest parts of the UK and should be looking to develop differently to the way the UK has over the last few decades. We identified a falling labour share of income as an issue for living standards. Well, there's a wealth of research that shows trade unions, perhaps unsurprisingly, increase the labour share of income. If we look internationally, a big study in the American Journal of Economics found that around 29% of the decline in the labour share of income in the USA could be attributed to the decline in unionisation. And then closer to home, a 2015 study by the University of Greenwich found that the UK's union membership rate halving from the 1980s until the present day was responsible for a reduction in that labour share of national income of up to 9.3%. And the IPPR's Commission on Economic Justice found that there is substantial evidence to suggest that unions increase wages by strengthening the bargaining powers of workers. Ultimately, that study estimated that around 40% of the increase in the average income share of the top 10% in advanced economies is related to declining membership in trade unions. There's a wealth of other evidence on union premium, as it's called in the UK too. At the moment, union members earn about 5% more than non-union members, but that varies drastically between different sectors. The National Institute of Economic and Social Research also found that the union wage premium is much larger for low-waged workers, so it can equalise wages too. So there's a bit more in the report as well, but there really is a wealth of evidence that trade unions increase the size of the pie for all workers, that labour share of income. And they also equalise wages, so those at the bottom get a bigger slice of that pie too. So they really can target the very specific problems that we're seeing in the Welsh economy. Unions also improve working standards. As part of this report, we conducted interviews with young and precarious workers in Wales, and we found some pretty negative things, actually. We heard stories about workers needing to work 6 days a week just to make ends meet, with no sick pay, so basically being unable to make ends meet if they fall ill. We heard about retail stores in Cardiff not filling up their first aid boxes, even when being asked to, and routinely not replacing dangerous equipment. And we heard about workplaces that only give their staff part-time hours, but require them to be available full-time and don't allow them in practice to take any other part-time jobs, which means they're locked into extremely low pay for the benefit of extremely wealthy companies. So these are all things that workers in Wales are experiencing when they go into work today. Obviously, improving working standards is something that's a core function of trade unions. A study by the University College London found that unionisation is positively associated with work-life balance. Another pretty huge study from nearly 2 million respondents across Europe and the USA found that there's a positive and significant correlation between union membership and job satisfaction, and union members are less likely to be stressed, worried, depressed, sad, or lonely. And it's worth pointing out that unions also do a bit to promote economic growth. So the University of Greenwich did some research which found that the UK is a wage-led economy, meaning that higher wages ultimately contribute more towards increased growth than they do to reduce growth via lower competitiveness for UK businesses. The study estimates the fall in union membership rates in the last three decades has actually reduced GDP by 1.6%, so it had a negative effect on GDP too. Something I found really interesting was Ireland's Nevin Economic Research Institute found that coordinated wage bargaining from trade unions could actually prevent companies from competing on lower costs, for example, by cutting wages, and instead encourage them to compete by innovating, so something that could increase productivity. So that could, in theory, mean that trade unions push economies towards a high wage and high productivity equilibrium, as opposed to a race to the bottom of lower wages and lower demand in the economy, and therefore lower growth. And this high road model is consistent with what we see in some of the best performing countries economically. So countries like Sweden, Norway, Denmark and Iceland have some of the most prosperous economies in the world, and the world's highest levels of well-being as well. And they also have the world's highest trade union rates. And finally, this graph is always one that tells the story really well. The red line is union membership in the UK, and the blue line is the income share of the top 1%, which you can see is inversely has an inverse relationship. So we talked a bit about the Nordic countries. A really quick case study on Sweden. It's ranked 7th on the Human Development Index. It has a national income per capita about $44,000 compared to about $36,000 in the UK. It's ranked 7th out of 146 countries on the World Happiness Index. And its close neighbours, Finland, Denmark and Iceland, make up the top three. It also has a Gini coefficient of 0.276. In other words, that means it's one of the most equal countries in the world. But Sweden also has the third highest trade union membership in the world. 88% of its employees are covered by collective bargaining. Its trade unions are incredibly powerful with sectoral bargaining. Essentially, there is a regular meeting of the entire sector with trade unions to set a minimum of pay and working conditions. Trade unions are viewed as powerful social partners by government when making economic policy. So New Zealand actually recently passed a Fair Pay Agreements Act to bring the same system into force. Wales doesn't have the power to do that, but the Welsh government has created fair work forums for retail and social care, which we had positive feedback about in our research. And a final point on Sweden, despite having far higher union membership rates, collective bargaining coverage and general union power, it loses far fewer days to industrial action than the UK does, particularly at the moment. So as suggested in the previous section's research, it does appear that pragmatic, constructive relationships between governments and powerful trade unions do constitute a high road model of high productivity and living standards, as opposed to the low road model that the UK is currently on of mutual antagonism between government and unions, low membership rates and lessening living standards and working rights. So we have an economy that is increasingly unequal and not providing heightened living standards for our citizens. We're looking to take a new path, and there's a wealth of evidence that a new relationship with unions can help to rewire the Welsh economy to increase the amount of money going to wages and salaries and to equalise the returns of growth. So how do we get there? The first thing we need to do is look at the challenges for trade unions in Wales. The first is declining union density, i.e. membership rates, and collective bargaining. So this is a really mixed picture in Wales. There is definitely a success story in here, and there is very definitely more to do as well. So the most recent figures show that Wales has a union density of 35.6%, and that this figure has risen, and that compares really favourably with, for example, England, where union membership fell to 20.8%. However, union membership has plummeted across the UK over the last few decades, and it has declined in Wales too. So over the devolved era, it has decreased from 39% to that 35% today, although it is now rising again. Collective bargaining coverage levels are really down too. So in 1979, 71% of UK workers actually were covered by collective bargaining agreements, and that's down to 39.6% today. Again, the situation in Wales is better. It's about 52% here. So while the union movement has been in decline in Wales over the long term, there are some signs of health, and it's doing a lot better than it is in England, frankly. If the rates of growth in union membership that we saw in the most recent update were replicated over the next 2 years, actually, Wales would have trade union membership twice as high as that of England. But that really means that Wales needs to not measure itself against England and instead look to international best practice. So our union membership rate of about 35% is a lot lower than those at the top of the league tables. So you've got Finland on 58%, Sweden 65%, Denmark on 67%, and then Iceland way at the top of 91%. So we need to look at ways to get Wales to the top of that league table. Young workers are a particular concern. In essence, young workers are not joining trade unions in big enough numbers to replace older workers who are retiring. So, for example, in the UK, those born in the late 1960s had a membership rate of almost 30% when they reached their late 20s. But those born in the late 80s only had a membership rate of about 20% when they reached the same age. So there's decline built into union membership rates. And this is probably true in Wales too, whereas 40% of employees age 50 and over are union members, only 32% of employees aged 25 to 34 are. Wales's trade union membership has been declining for a number of decades in the long term. And looking at these stats, it looks reasonably likely that it would continue to decline, although it has increased in the last year. The private sector is another key area to focus on. So in Wales, 62% of public sector employees are members of a trade union compared to only 20% of private sector workers. The Wales CUC said in a recent blog post for the IWA that there was no question that the biggest challenge faced was the private sector. So in that analysis, they theorised that trade unionism is something that many private sector workers are just not exposed to, They've got no clear idea about why they should be a member of a trade union. And this is something that was strongly backed up by our interviews with young workers and those in precarious employment. So among those we spoke to, there was near unanimity amongst those workers that a lack of knowledge amongst their peers was hampering trade unions, with most people in their situation not knowing what trade unions do or seeing the relevance of them. It's worth pointing out as well that when the problems surrounding young workers and private sector workers combine, so i.e. a young private sector worker, the problem can be particularly bad. So 90% of under 30s who are on low and medium incomes in the UK work in the private sector, and only 9.3% of them are members of trade unions. So often it is the people who can most benefit from union representation who are the least likely to be members. So whereas union density in the public sector in Wales is reasonably high, in the private sector it's extremely low. Tangible action to increase union density and collective bargaining amongst the private sector, particularly amongst younger workers, will be necessary if Wales is to match the highest international performers and rewire its economy towards that high road approach that is seen in more successful economies. And finally, it's worth saying that the UK, and by extension Wales, has some of the most restrictive anti-union laws of any advanced economy. I won't go into this in too much detail here because it's covered in the report, but it's worth saying that since 1980, the UK government of various colours has passed 8 pieces of anti-union legislation, and we're drawing up a 9th one now. Given the sheer scale of legislation in this area, we can see how much of a priority restricting unions has been for the various UK governments over past decades. And how ineffective it's been in reducing strike action, as we're seeing at the moment. So it's not all doom and gloom. There is some genuinely good work going on in Wales at the moment to support trade unions. There's the Wales Union Learning Fund, which is a pot of money that the Welsh Government provides for unions to bid into to provide work-based learning programmes. There's a new pilot project to support the delivery of the careers and work-related experience elements of the curriculum for Wales, entitled Unions in the World of Work. One of the really big things that's going on at the moment is the implementation of the recommendations of the Fair Work Commission's final report, Fair Work Wales. This had 48 recommendations that you'll be pleased to hear. I'm not going to go and list all of, but some progress has been made. There's a new Directorate for Social Partnership and Fair Work within the Welsh Government. And it has led on implementing a variety of these actions. I mentioned there have been fair work forums created with social care and retail. I think these are particularly promising because they seem to at least be partially based on some kind of sectoral agreements. So something we see from other countries is that those that negotiate on a sector basis, like Sweden, have quite good outcomes and high union membership rates as well. And those that negotiate on an individual company basis, like the UK does, have quite bad membership rates and not brilliant outcomes. We've seen a few other things implemented, like a health and safety forum, a Know Your Rights and Responsibilities campaign alongside unions and employers, and the development of a new set of indicators to track fair work. There's also a social partnership and public procurement bill, which is putting a social partnership council of government, unions, and employers on a statutory basis. There's been a new focus on increasing living wage employers, and there have been public pronouncements in favour of strong unions as well. So that's just a whistle-stop tour. There's more detail on each of those and more in the reports. But there's a lot of work going on, and it definitely is going on, which is the good news. Obviously, though, there are some limitations. So, for example, fair work forums aren't going to be a like-for-like replacement for sectoral collective bargaining because they're ultimately voluntary in a lot of circumstances. And we also face that huge challenge attempting to unionise Wales's private sector and young workers in particular. However, if we want to get Wales to the top of those international league tables, it's going to need to be done. So we've come up with a few proposals that we think will help. So we've got four recommendations. Our first one is something called a union renewal fund. We want the Welsh Government to create another pot of money for trade unions to bid into for things like running campaigns and hiring organisers, targeted specifically at priority areas. So the private sector and young workers, for example. One thing we noticed in our research for this project is certain sort of dark spots where the unions don't reach or don't reach as well. Obviously, unions are defined by their members. Public sector unions in Wales are bigger and have more resource, which they use to support their members in the public sector. When it comes to work going on to support unionisation amongst groups like gig economy workers, for example, takeaway delivery app riders, it is there, but there's far less resource, and we think the Welsh Government could help plug this gap. There have been similar funds before. There was a union modernisation fund that existed at a UK government level in the new Labour years, and the Scottish Government currently has a Fair Work and Trade Union Modernisation Fund, very similar to this, which has had successes in unionising workers in the hospitality and fast food sectors there. Wales actually used to have a Wales Development Fund for unions, which was in the 2007 Labour Manifesto and then the coalition agreement between Labour and Plaid Cymru. However, it was very short-lived and quite badly financed. There's not a lot of information on it out there, but one source we found indicated its yearly budget was only about £60,000. You compare that to the Wales Union Learning Fund budget of £4.5 million a year. So there's a clear need for some financial assistance for the unionisation of young workers and private sector workers, but it's going to need to be properly resourced if it's going to work. It's also worth pointing out that nearly all of the young and precarious workers we spoke to thought this was a good idea, because it could help mitigate that lack of understanding that they had raised. Lots of them told us that they initially had negative preconceptions of unions from the media and didn't really know what they did. And it was a personal touch from a union rep or organiser that made them join. Trade and union officials we spoke to were also pretty unanimous in this being a good idea. Our second recommendation is around Fair Work accreditations. These were suggested by the Fair Work Commission, and we think they could be a useful tool for the Welsh Government. One problem we have in this area in general is that the Welsh Government doesn't have a huge amount of power over employment and industrial relations or trade union regulation. The Fair Work Commission suggested bringing in an accreditation for employers that meet a gold standard. We think if this gold standard includes trade union access and collective bargaining, and that it comes with real benefits for employers, such as advantageous access for grants or loans, it could give real teeth to efforts to get some elements of the private sector in Wales to support unionisation. Another really simple thing we've recommended is union density and collective bargaining coverage as outcomes. We measure collective bargaining coverage in Wales with what's called a national indicator. We don't actually have a target for it, which would be called a national milestone, although there is some work going on, as I said, to measure indicators of fair work, but we think there should be an explicit target for union membership and collective bargaining coverage. And we also think they should publish it, the Welsh Government should publish a plan of action to achieve these targets, with stats for the private sector tracked and targeted separately. Finally, we've recommended looking at the devolution of employment and industrial relations. The Welsh Government has made it pretty clear that it maybe would act in this area if this was devolved, because we had the Trade Union Act in 2017. So we've recommended they consider further work on their position regarding the devolution of industrial and employment relations, and to look at the potential for the devolution of power to regulate trade unions as a potential first step. So I think we're slightly ahead of schedule. Thank you very much for listening. That was a whistle-stop tour of the report. There's a lot more detail in there, and I think I'll pass on to Joe and we'll go on to questions.
Thank you very much, Harry. Yeah, that was a really good run-through of what is quite is a good 40 pages of lots of information. So I definitely would encourage you to read the report if you can, because, it delves into a lot of those kind of those case studies and the living standards stuff in a lot more detail as well. But really useful to get you to talk through all of that. We've had a few questions, so I'd encourage you all to kind of add more questions if you do. If not, you'll have me asking questions that I want to hear the answer to, and you might not necessarily want that. So first up, we've got a question from Helen Taylor, who asks, is the higher rate of union membership in over 50s in Wales influenced by poorer quality of work available to young people? You're on mute, Harry.
Thank you. Maybe it's better that way. I don't know. I think that's a really interesting question. I think the evidence that we had was that there was a culture problem and there was a lack of understanding problem. So one of the things when we spoke to workers, young workers in particular, in really highly unionized workplaces, particularly the public sector, they joined the union because there was a real culture of unionization. So, you know, I spoke to one ambulance worker who hadn't joined it in previous jobs. I think he used to work in call centers, he said, but he hadn't joined it previously. Then when he joined the ambulance service, they had a bit of an induction about why unions are important and why people were all members of unions there. Obviously, his colleagues were, a lot of them were union members too. And he had a union rep who explained in detail and gave that personal touch about why being a member of a trade union was important. And I think that personal touch is something that came through again and again in terms of dispelling some of the myths or perceptions that people get from the media about trade unions. So it's I think there is partially a quality of work thing, a quality of work element to it, in the sense that there are employers that we found that didn't produce very good quality jobs and were worried about the impact of unionization in their ability to continue not providing not very good quality jobs, essentially. So one retail worker we spoke to told us that a GMB rep came in to talk to popped in to talk to the staff, and that the management quickly told us to get back to work and not to talk to him and to not engage. And she said she felt like it was a discouragement to join, and they were telling her not to join. When we spoke to some union officials, they told us stories about, for example, employers offering pay rise an extra pound an hour to not be a member of a trade union. So there's definitely a culture, and that culture is, I think, connected to quality of work as well. Yeah.
Interesting. I'd like to build on the back of that and ask, you know, the IWA, it's something in policy conversations that regularly comes up, but at the IWA, we're keen to root our work in the lived experience of people of Wales. And as part of this work, obviously, you undertook a series of interviews with union members. I just would be interested to hear you reflect on what struck you about your interactions and, you know, how that managed to feed into the report. And is there any learning for kind of future reports in this area that might people might be able to take away with them?
Yeah, one of the things that, well, for the wonks among us who do research, one of the things is it's really hard to access people who aren't actively involved in politics and policy circles, you know, delivery drivers and just people who don't really have any engagement with politics and policy. It can be really, really hard to get in touch with them. And it's quite resource intensive in terms of discussions we had with people. One thing that came through was that every single person we interviewed, every young or precarious worker, said they were stressed about money at the moment. There wasn't a single person who answered no to that question. And a good chunk of them said they couldn't afford a comfortable standard of living either. So I think there's real questions about how our economy is delivering for a lot of people. Some of the trends and themes that came through, the importance of good managers was a big one. There was a lot of the negative stories were about bullying managers and how they've been mistreated. And actually that fed into a real sense of low standards where workers that had been through really negative experiences, like unacceptably negative experiences like that, were really willing to accept lower conditions at other employers if they were just left alone. So we got a lot of people we spoke to who were in a job that was providing very low pay, very bad conditions, no sick pay. And they were saying, yeah, this is fine because my old manager used to be horrible and used to pick on me. I used to have a really bad time with mental health. As long as I'm left alone to drive for Amazon, this is all I can expect and this is all I can hope for. So low standards was something that really came through too, and low expectations.
Interesting. Yeah, and also obviously the role of the unions in raising those standards and making people recognise, you know, their value. We've got a question from Councillor Susan Ellsmore. Thank you for your question. It's an interesting one on, might there be a case for a publicity campaign to encourage union membership across all sectors? I think that's interesting in regards to, you know, your analysis of trade union membership levels and how those can be elevated.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a case for one. I think there already is one. I think there's the Welsh Government and Wales TUC and trade unions and employers associations as well are conducting a Know Your Rights and Responsibilities campaign. I don't have the details of what that's targeted at or how widespread it is, or, you know, the internal metrics of how effective it's been. But there is one at the moment, and one of the things that we like about the Union Renewal Fund pot of money to bid into is that unions could also do their own campaigns based on this. So, you know, particularly targeted, like we said, at young and private sector workers, you know, unions could build organizational capacity and campaigns capacity and learn about what messages work to those specific groups and which ones don't. So there is a general one at the moment, but we think that the Union Renewal Fund could really open that up.
Yeah, so it's kind of baked into what one of our recommendations is. So yes, yeah. Could reinforce that. We've got a question from Richard Spate, who's from Unison Cymru Wales. We've got a couple of questions, actually, so I'll ask both of these. What successful strategies are adopted internationally to encourage young and private sector workers to join the unions? And obviously that's a reflection of the report of some particular gaps in union membership in Wales. So, yes.
Yeah. That's a really interesting question, because I think a huge part of it has been culture. So so when we look at Sweden and Denmark and Norway, it's very easy to say Welsh government just copy them and everything will be fine. Like, we're open to our eyes are open to the fact that this is a huge challenge. It's really, really hard to unionise people in the private sector in Wales, particularly because the Welsh government is pretty limited in its levers. The UK government could do it a lot more easily. The Welsh government has to grapple with the fact that it doesn't have all the levers, and a lot of its companies are based outside of Wales. So HQs that set policy, or even direct line managers that set more granular workplace policy, aren't necessarily based in Wales. So the Welsh government's influence over them is pretty limited. In terms of internationally, again, it comes back to that culture question. So I did a lot of really interesting reading on Swedish trade union history for this, which didn't make its way into the report in detail, you'll be pleased to know. But culture, it was culturally a huge one. That culture was a huge element of it. Sorry, the trade unions used to be a lot more than what we would consider trade unions in the UK to be today. They were social clubs. They would own pubs and bars. They would be a real almost... counter society to the government. They had huge influence, and actually that was I've been reading an Iron Bevan biography by Michael Foot at the moment, and that was actually true in Wales. For a long time, trade unions would have, you've seen things like miners welfare halls. They would have huge say in implementing things on the ground and organizing social activities and nominating candidates for election, even you know, ignoring the Labour Party influence. They would do it independently as well. So one of the that on the ground delivery is a really important thing internationally. So in the Nordic countries, not only do they organize that social side of things, but they also delivered services on the ground too. So they're still involved in the delivery of welfare services. So that's one of the real justifications, I think, behind the Wales Union Learning Fund, is that when people can really see the benefits of trade unions, when government allows them to do that, they can it drives up membership rates. So it's a complex one, but there are good examples we can use.
Yeah, I don't think there's any need to apologise for your inclusion of Swedish case study, because I think that's fascinating. And also in terms of, you know, the way that it works into the report in saying, you know, let's not tie ourselves to what is happening UK-wide and what might be considered, you know, quite a low bar. But actually, let's look further afield and let's think about what union membership can really deliver for the economy of Wales, I think, and for people in Wales is really valuable and adds to the report. We got the follow-up question from Richard, which is... is there any way that the Welsh government and public bodies can be held accountable via the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, particularly the More Prosperous Wales and More Prosperous Wales, that's the same thing twice, for work to increase union membership and density?
Yeah, that's a really interesting, very specific question that I wouldn't have a detailed answer to at the moment. I know there are, I know the Future Generations Commissioner provides a lot of guidance on towards public bodies and how to reach their sustainability goals, and that's actually behind the scenes a big part of what the Future Generations Commissioner does. So I think maybe even looking to the Commissioner and saying how much are they being advised to increase union membership and density is an important one. And I think that's plays into sort of a wider point as well that came through in some of the interviews with trade union officials, which was that the Welsh government is pretty good with engagement with trade unions and doing positive things with trade unions. And that's a ministerial level and that's an official level. but as it cascades downwards and outwards to, I won't throw any organisations under the bus by naming them, but as it cascades out to more arm's length organisations, that message isn't necessarily getting through to have to not only to unionise themselves and to recognise unions themselves, but also when they're giving out funding as part of their role to organisations, whether they're asking those organisations to be part of trade unions and to recognise trade unions and have collective bargaining agreements, it's not spreading out. So how you do that is potentially through the Future Generations Commissioner, potentially through a bit more through you know, policy measures, but that's definitely something that came through. Yeah.
Interesting. We've got a question from Tom Hoyles, who asks, in your interviews, did the issue that members mentioned differ from highly unionized workplaces to non-unionized workplaces?
So everyone we interviewed for this one was a trade union member, but in terms of other, we interviewed trade union members, young trade union members and precarious trade union members in precarious employment. That was one of the big learnings that I mentioned about access. It was easier to access through trade unions, and getting in touch with ones that weren't interested and never applied was really, really tricky. So I don't know how, I know Tom works for GMB, so I don't know how they deal with that, but it can be a really tricky one. In terms of what we know goes on in private sector, in the private sector or in more precarious work where there aren't trade unions, there were some agreements that trade unions had. It depended on the level of engagement with trade unions, because some employers had agreements with trade unions and they were still pretty bad in terms of working practices. But I think that comes from a place of almost desperation within the union movement to have some sort of an agreement with some employers, even if it doesn't necessarily guarantee everything. So that there needs to be a really deep relationship between union and employers and the staff there. Just recognising a union wasn't everything that we found, yeah.
Thank you. We've got a question from Steve Davies, who says, your point about union access for employers to gain Fair Work accreditation could be extended to procurement more generally. This is a lower level of obligation than the long-standing idea of social clauses, which the Tories banned under Thatcher, he thinks. But why do you think the Welsh Government haven't insisted on unions having access to employees as part of procurement?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, probably one for the Welsh Government rather than me. I'm not entirely sure. My guess would probably be, and you know, I think they should be doing more of that, frankly. I think they probably are doing increasing amounts of it if you look at the work that's going on. I think it's very hard to get the private sector to do anything. I think a lot of what the Welsh Government tries to do is increase relationships with the private sector and to get them to engage with the Welsh Government, so then they can lead them down a path of getting fairer work outcomes. Because I think one of the issues the Welsh Government has is it really finds it very difficult to say, just because its powers and its funding, finds it very difficult to say to private sector employers, you have to do this, because it doesn't really have those enforcement powers. So I think the funding issue in terms of procurement is something that should be looked at more, particularly in terms of unionisation. I think it is being looked at more, but yeah, I think there's more to do. But in terms of the specific question, it wouldn't be one for me necessarily.
Okay. And one we've got from Johan Bellin from the National Union of Journalists is, which I'm glad this question is asked, because it kind of situates it in what is happening currently, you know, that we've seen a round of strikes across the UK and more coming up over the next couple of months. They ask that with the postal dispute, managers claim that the trade unions involved are being conservative with a small c. How can trade unions in all sectors demonstrate that they are innovative and forward thinking?
Yes, it's an interesting question. There used to be the Union Modernisation Fund. So I think there's, and if you listen out for our podcast, I talked this up to Hannah Blythin and Nisreen from Wales TUC, just about perceptions of trade unions. I think there is an image problem with trade unions. And I think part of rectifying that is work on the ground, like we mentioned, and that personal touch from reps and organisers with what we found overturned it. In terms of the post dispute, there's sometimes accusations of being conservative with a small c means not turning the Royal Mail into Amazon delivery services. So which is part of what we're trying to say is we need to have more mature, constructive relationships. So at the moment, the Royal Mail shouting at trade unions and saying that blocking progress and all that isn't a particularly constructive model, and it works much better in other countries. But I think the UN modernization fund that the UK government used to have was about increasing things like diversity in trade unions and making sure they're relevant to a new world of work. I think, but they also think there's a threat of consistently defining modernization as reductions of working standards as well. So not all change is good change.
No, that's a really important caveat. I had a couple of questions around what's going on kind of from a Welsh perspective and what a UK perspective is. And, you know, with the UK government taking action to clamp down on some union activity, you know, do you think this is a particularly good time for Welsh government to act in a devolved context, to kind of say we're actually on a different path to what is happening in the rest of the UK? Do you think it's a fertile moment then?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, especially when there's because whenever there are more eyes on something, there's more of a chance to persuade and to change minds. I think often just, you know, me and Joe both have master's degrees in political communication, but I think it's a, you'll know this, but so often when politicians go with public opinion, it's because they don't think they're going to get their case heard for change. But I think when people are paying very strict attention to a particular issue and it's dominating headlines, I think then there is more opportunity to lead public opinion changing. So I think it's a good teaching moment, essentially, I think, from a lot of politicians. And in terms of taking a different path, I think from a broader perspective, I think we'd always want to see that if it benefits, you know, people in Wales. I think we spoke about devolution initially as a policy laboratory, that things that happen, we could do good things in Wales, and if they worked, they could spread across the UK. I think, you know, we're pretty clear in our report that we think this could be a really good thing. And I think, you know, the Welsh government should feel, you know, enabled to go down that path if it benefits working people. And it seems like that's needed at the moment.
Yes, I think we've got time for maybe one more question. We've got also, I would urge you to look at in the chat, Jamie Insole from UCU Wales has put in a really good, interesting things about Germany as well, which obviously not the case study that we looked at here, but, you know, some interesting different takes there. So I'd urge you to have a look at those. He asked the question of, at the moment, we see a lot of dislocation between workplace experience, skills planning, and Welsh government's overall ambition. How can we situate unions at the centre of future-proofing around automation, emerging technologies? I think that talks to some of the stuff you were speaking about in terms of modernisation, and not that meaning one's, you know, lessening of workers' rights and stuff like that. But would you speak to that?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. I think, you know, we mentioned in that, and I think the Welsh government's doing really good stuff on this at the moment as well, because one of the things about my job is it's economic policy. So I bounce from different issue, different issue in economic policy. So this is, I've always been, you know, interest in trade unions. This has been a big learning experience, but I did, from the outside, always think, so the social partnership agenda, it seems positive, but I don't really, you know, think it's as strong, you know, it doesn't seem to have any teeth to it. But actually, when I was doing the research into Sweden and some of the Nordic countries, actually social partnership and strong social partners is something that comes up again and again and again. And, you know, those really empowered trade unions with a lot of members and a lot of leverage, but also brought into discussions on economic policy and industrial policy as a complete norm. And I think, and also I should say, the employers associations are brought in as well. I think that makes a lot of sense when you're making those top level economic decisions, that you would bring in representatives of the workers and you would bring in representatives of the employers as well, and balance those opinions against each other and try and increase dialogue between them. So I think, in terms of the question of how we can situate unions at the centre of future-proofing around automation and emerging technology, I think the Welsh Government has a huge convening role in that. And I think that social partnership agenda it is really important in that. Yeah.
Right. I've got time for this last question, which builds on Councillor Susan's previous question. But she asked, in terms of younger people, does the cost of union membership act as an impediment to joining? You know, speaking about the makeup of union members at the moment in Wales.
Interestingly enough, no, because I thought that would be a huge thing. And it is, in a way. It definitely gets brought up that they didn't want to join because it cost money and they didn't know what it did. But then a lot of the union members we spoke to then change their opinion when they knew what trade unions did and had help from them, and then they were happy to pay it, because a lot of trade unions do have reduced rates for people on low wages or for younger people, so the costs are lower. So it wasn't necessarily just the cost that was the impediment to joining. It was the fact they didn't know what they were getting for the cost. And then when they did know what they were getting for the cost, it was actually quite low, and they it didn't come up as too much of a complaint amongst the union workers that we spoke to.
That's an interesting, an interesting thing to reflect on as we close. So thank you for all your questions. And thank you very much, Harry, for talking us through the project, and to you all being here with us today and contributing to the discussion. I know that we see these events as a kind of start of a discussion, and the paper as a start of a discussion more so than the end of a discussion. So we'd urge you to get in contact with us if you have any kind of responses, or Harry directly. We'd also like to thank once again the Friends Provident Charitable Foundation for supporting the IWA's economic policy work going forward. Our aim, as always, in these open and free events is to identify the issues that need further thought, articulate clearly what those issues are, and get people thinking about what needs to change, why and how, so we can all see what our role is in making Wales better, which is the IWA's mission statement. And I think this paper really strongly does that. I'd also like to take this opportunity to mark that is Harry's final report with us at the IWA. He's leaving to join a really great organization, which I can't say, but he's going, if you keep an eye on his social media channels, I'm sure he'll tell you soon. And we look forward, you know, we really genuinely look forward to seeing you have a great impact in your new role, as you have had here over the last couple of years. So diolch yn fawr iawn, Harry. Thanks for the last 2 years. And moving on, if you want to have any early notification of future IWA events, if you look at our website as well, we've got lots of events coming up in person and online, and recordings of all of the sessions direct to your inbox without even having to go and look for them, then please do join us as a member on the Support Us page of our website, which is at iwa.wales. And without further ado, I'll let you leave to your lunches. Thank you very much. Diolch yn fawr iawn.
Thanks, everyone. Good to see you all.